You still hear it. Blind Freddy could have told you that. It's a sharp reproach, Australian-made, calling some idea or conclusion or point of view so obvious that even a blind person could see it. Since the expression popped into the language before the First World War, scholars wondered if there ever was an actual Blind Freddy. Perhaps it was a Sydney hawker selling razor blades in town, or a blind fan of boxing called Freddie Solomon, again in Sydney. But Adrian Mitchell, author and teacher of literature, has another candidate, Freddie Pottinger, idiot son of the aristocracy, wastrel gambler, and a notoriously inept trooper in the goldfields. Adrian makes his case in an elegant history just published by Wakefield Press, Blind Freddie, the Pottinger Attainment. And Adrian joins me now. Adrian, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Good evening.
Now, look, let's clear the ground. This Blind Freddy had to be well known. So
yep,
a hawker right. and a boxing enthusiast doesn't cut it.
But Blind Freddy, it has to be something that is really taken the attention of interstate, not just Sydney.
Yes.
And Freddie Pottinger did it in spades.
Well, just before we get to Freddie Pottinger, tell us about Freddie's family. His father has a notable role in the establishment of Hong Kong.
Yeah. That was a real discovery. I didn't know any of that when I first got going. His father, a really strange young fellow. He'd come from what is these days the wrong part of Belfast, but then was a lot more respectable. And he got himself out to India to make his fortune in the East India Company, worked his way up that career. It was almost an alternative to the British government, the British public service, the East India Service. And he started off, had an ear for local languages. He got himself a job as a translator. He got himself involved in what he was translating, and bit by bit he parlayed that and his early career, he's in all the moves that are important in the British establishment in India. When he went home, he'd done well enough that his was a name that you weren't going to forget. He'd got a knighthood out of that. I mean, why else would you go and do that sort of thing?
Well, to make money.
The silver plate and so on, yeah. Getting a knighthood is another way of making money too, I think. So he was asked to go and serve the British interests again because China had misbehaved, and he came back to apply the blowtorch of British authority to the Chinese, because the Chinese had done the impossible thing. They'd dropped $20 million worth of opium down the sewer, and the people who owned that opium wanted some of their money back.
Those people, of course, all being British.
Yeah, all of these people are British. And all this goes back to behind that T. The British had to earn enough money and do it
from opium,
fair means or foul, to pay for the tea.
But we are getting to this man's son. So he becomes a baronet. He's important. He plays an important role in the establishment of Hong Kong.
Yep.
But then he dies, and his title and his fortune are inherited by his son, Frederick, whom we shall refer to as Freddy. What did Freddy do with that fortune in the 3 years after his father died?
Well, it's a good question. I don't think any of his father's fortune was used to pay off a particular gambling debt. Freddy did a thing that he placed a bet that is just short of $1 million on a horse, and it didn't win. And someone had to pay the bookie. The horse should have won. I mean, everyone knows that
it should have won.
Yeah, indeed.
Especially with so much money on it.
And it was such a close thing, it nearly came second.
Yeah.
So Freddie was suddenly, he was in trouble. He was in trouble with lots of lesser debts as well. But he had to pay that off, and he used his mother's jewels for that. And if this sounds like every mid-century, 19th-century novel about a rogue that you've read, well, Freddie was, you know, he was up there in the front row with them all. And in fact, he was doing this slightly ahead of the books that that would immediately come to mind.
Therefore, he was a model for it.
Yeah, that's right.
And what does a man who has dispersed his fortune almost instantaneously and used his mother's jewels to pay his debts, he goes to Australia, does he not?
Yeah, but what he does is he goes to Australia with an accent. So he's been sent to Eton. His father has, what has been pointed out to the family, an unfortunate Irish accent. And so we can't have the son having that. So the son goes to Eton and he ends up, can you imagine someone speaking like a cross between Boris Johnson and Prince Harry? So that's Freddie in disgrace for various things, for having set up an establishment with a young lady that he can't afford and so on. He's out of there. The family don't want to know him. He goes to Australia. And how does he get to Australia? Well, he wins a race just before he leaves, and that means he can travel first class.
And he leaves his title behind, at least at first.
Well, he hides it. That's
yes.
right.
He uses his initials,
but not the title. You don't actually know how much these yobbos down in the southern hemisphere know about what's going on in the northern hemisphere. So just in case, it's a good idea not to have too many fluorescent lights on. Got himself to Australia at the wrong time of year, or got himself to Melbourne at the wrong time of year. It's very wet, very cold, and decided that he'd go to where it was even colder and go up to the southern districts in New South Wales and see if he can get him a job. Getting somewhere close to gold, not actually digging it out himself, but guarding it after someone's done all that hard work.
So,
as a way of getting started, he becomes a mounted policeman.
So he gets a government job.
Yep.
And isn't this just the absolute blueprint of the broke aristocrat in disgrace, whose family want him out of Britain, comes to Australia, gets himself a minor government job. So he's got enough money to eat and drink. But for his name to become famous, he has to have become infamous. What did he do? Let's cut to the chase here. What did he do that made him so well known in Australia?
Well, he gets started, as you say, and he's placed, his first appointment, his first serious appointment, is where the Lambing Flat riots are taking place. His job is to establish law and order on the goldfields there, and he's right in the thick of it, and he's just the man for the job because he had been trained for about 4 or 5 years in Britain, in the guards. He was a big boy, and he knew how to look after himself. So he knew how to show and tell others how to do some of that looking after too. So he's in the middle of all that. And he's the glamour boy, and in fact, he's sent a letter, self-addressed letter, care of his boss up in Bathurst, but it says Sir Frederick Pottinger, and nobody knew he was in Australia. No one heard of this guy.
Yeah.
So that established excitement all the way up to Government House. I mean, the point is that with a title like that, Freddie was quite possibly. Don't know, but quite possibly the equal of the governor socially. So we better start looking out for young Fred. And young Fred gets anointed. He's going to be the star of the new look police force that gets put together in 1862. And the very week that this is all going to press and announcing it all, Freddie disgraced himself again. I mean, Freddie disgraced himself. He sort of repeated himself, but with useful variations, which wouldn't be boring. He played billiards. I mean, that's what you do when you've been to Eton and you've been to the guards. And there's got to be a point to
And you're bored and you're drunk and you're probably betting something on it.
Well, something like that. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, he's still playing and he's playing against the local sharp. And he accuses Freddie of being a shonk, of cheating. Well, Freddie didn't take that too well, and suddenly there's a to-do in the pool hall, and Freddie is belting this guy with his billiard cue and chucking his head through the window, and so he's a disgrace, and that's why he got sent to this awful place, Lambing Flat, and he's got to work his way into, got to become a good guy.
And the world
up the road is Frank Gardner, the famous bushranger.
Yep.
I mean, that's why Freddie's out there being an inspector. He's got to stop bushranging because they've striking gold up in the Mar Hills. And so this starts the first of a series of escapades. Frank Gardner keeps on tormenting Freddie by putting things in the local press about how Freddie missed him again. And some of those are quite
Freddy's
funny.
So Freddie's name is getting about and it's being Freddy's attached to the notions of failure.
Yep.
And then comes the biggest gold robbery in the history of the colony to that point.
Yep. That's right. It's a doozy. It's a doozy. There's a guy called Ben Hall, who we've all heard of, who appears somewhere out in the background to have pinched Freddie's horse. And it was an expensive horse. But Freddie took a dislike to Ben Hall straight away, and he also took one to Frank Gardner. Those two put their heads together and organized this heist just outside of Eugara. And it was good. Found perfect place to hold that up. And it was, again, a shocking, massive amount of gold got taken. And the bushrangers have escaped with the gold. And if I might just sort of notice here, because I'm sure it's going to come up again, bushrangers, they did a lot of firing of guns. There was a lot of bang, 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 but people didn't actually get hurt too much. It's a curious thing. And the inspectors used to fire at the bushrangers, and there was no report of bushrangers going around to emergency services. I don't know what it was all about, but I've got a theory. Anyway, one poor fellow got shot. He actually did get shot, and he got shot in an intimate part of himself, and it probably meant he wasn't going to be riding a bicycle for a while. But he's the only policeman I can find any wounding for in this whole saga. So Freddie is chasing after where he thinks the gold has been taken to, because there are footprints in the mud, and there's another fellow, a black tracker. I have a lot of time for it, and I don't know, you come across Billy Dargan yourself. He seems to have been an absolute star at his job, and he basically said, no, they went this way. Well, Freddie being Freddie knows better than that. So he headed off for where he was sure Gardner had gone to, which is Victoria.
So he headed off in the wrong direction.
That's right, and in the wet weather. And by the time he worked out that he was wrong and turned around and came back, he ran into a couple of bushrangers who were leading horses with gold and money they can't count to and so on. He had actually got ahead of the bushrangers somehow or other and turned around on his way back feeling sorry and miserable. There they were. So he had another bang, 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 and that went on. Nobody got hurt and the gold got saved, but people escaped.
But in the way of these things, instead of Freddie being congratulated for this stroke of good fortune, he was pilloried. Still, for having ridden off in the wrong direction. And this is where, as I understand your argument, you are building up the notion of a publicly acknowledged fool.
You've got the professional credentials. I'm just setting out on the table all this sort of layering of how I think it's almost impossible that anybody else could be such a deal as Blind Freddy.
And I've read your professional writing, sir, and you have laid it out. You have laid it out convincingly. But I'm going to call a halt to this conversation because what we have given people is a taste of this extraordinary colonial comedy, which we have this gorgeous little inheritance of even today. Blind Freddy. This is the man, a drunken, gambling baronet who got a few things right but was nevertheless mocked across Australia for what he got wrong.
Yeah. Like a lot of them, he actually did start to go sour towards then. Well, you would.
Yeah.
Enough's enough. You would. But he tipped Ben Hall's girlfriend out of Ben Hall's cottage, and Ben Hall was not going to be staying there anymore, to others, tipped her out in the cold middle. She'd had a new baby, tipped her out in the rain and set fire to the cottage so they couldn't move back in. That was considered poor form.
Mm.
I don't understand why people would think that.
Yeah.
And bit by bit, he started to show that his hair was getting ruffled. But the great piece at the end of his career, he decided the only way to catch bush rangers was to tempt them into showing off challenge them to a horse race. And, you know, there was a horse race. He was going to enter in, and he reckoned the bushrangers would come in and try and show that they could ride better than he could. Well, and the word got round. Everybody thought there was going to be a great old shoot-up. John Gilbert dressed up as a lady again. I mean, there's so much going on in the Australian bush. I do not understand how people could be amazed that Auntie Jack got invented. It
goes back to the earliest days of the colony. It's all there. Adrian, I hear the despair in your voice, but it is a despair of somebody who's done a good deal of laughing and a great deal of research and writing. And thank you very much for joining us on Late Night Live.
Well, I thank you, and I hope everybody gets a chuckle.
and perhaps has a look at your book. The book is called Blind Freddy, The Pottinger Attainment. And in the distinguished scholar Adrian Mitchell's view, this is the man that has given us, even to this day, the taunt of Blind Freddy.